Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, broadcasting live, unscripted, and always unrehearsed on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the frequency modulated band. And streaming live all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other, on voiceofvashon.org. My greetings today. Today is, of course, New Year's Eve. And I am finishing my broadcast, and then later on this evening, I will be flying through the night to go to Florida. My Stockholm family is flying from Stockholm and meeting me halfway in Florida. I'm flying from here to Florida. And I am doing this connected to both an internal and external plumbing system, draining to bilges externally. And it will be interesting to see how I manage all of this. And I have a plan, of course. I have the op order as to how I'm going to do all of it. And I'm also seeing my regular physician a little bit later on today to make sure that all of the couplings are secure and that nothing is going to come loose and adrift while I am moving from here to Key West, because that's where I'm going to end up. My greetings today also go out to all of the people who live on the magical Isle of Vashon who have not yet been a part of the Old Man Winter campaign. These remarks are not directed at Captain Joe's people who have been so generous in their donations, in their gifts, and in their treasure since I announced the Old Man Winter need for keeping the Voice of Vashon going. In particular, though, do I address my remarks right now to those of Captain Joe's people who live on the island and who, for one reason or another, have not yet made a decision about their end-of-the-year contributions. I had a signal a little while ago from the ever-lovely Kate, the executive director for the Voice of Vashon. And she tells me in that signal that Old Man Winter is shy just under $4,000. There are about 10,000 of us on the island. If there were 4,000 who each put a dollar bill and a note into an envelope and sent it to Kate, that would take care of that. But in particular, I'm not talking about keeping my broadcast on the air. That one is secure. All of my people, and many of you live not on the magical isle. Many of you live far, far away and have been so generous. And I know this because Kate sends me the letters and notes that you all send along with your donations. If there was ever an example of good works, it is Captain Joe's people who support the Voice of Vashon so as to keep your captain up in the captain's chair. But for those who have yet to make that decision, in particular, am I talking about the Vashon alerts? These are the alerts that warn all of us who live on the magical isle of ferry outages, of trees that are down, which happens frequently, big trees that are down over highways, Vashon Highway Southwest, the artery that goes from the north end to the south end of the island, and it's often completely blocked. And the news for that comes from the Vashon alerts, and that comes from the Voice of Vashon. So, I do not even begin to presume to advise you how anyone should make their donations and where they should put them, because each of us has our own priorities. But if you are still questioning in your own mind whether or not you should help out with the Vashon alerts, and you have a couple bucks, throw them into an envelope and send them to the ever-lovely Kate so that we are able also to keep on sending out Vashon alerts. I also send out greetings to all of the wonderful people, Captain Joe's people, who have sent me gifts, cards, letters, recognition of my 50th birthday, and those from people who I went to sea with, people who have sailed with me, served under my command in particular, and also island people who have sent me. I got in my post the other day a parcel from my brother, Captain Ron, and his lovely lady, Laura. And it was a English coin collection from their treasure, knowing that this is something that I would appreciate and enjoy. And another gift that I'm using to stay warm, I have, thanks to my XO, a Lighthouse Service blanket. And Sailor and I share the Lighthouse Service blanket. And for all of these things am I enormously grateful. And for many of them, I have not yet been able to adequately express in writing my gratitude and my thanks. I do so here. The Binnacle List, of course, is highlighted this week by the crossing of the bar of a President of the United States, Jimmy Carter, who was also a graduate of the Naval Academy. And it is in that sense that I recognize him as a brother sailor. Over the years, his legacy as president, and then after his presidency, a one-term presidency, his legacy as a peacemaker, has been recorded with varying degrees of either approbation or otherwise. But what comes through loud and clear to me is that he was a gracious and decent human being. He lived for just over 100 years, and I think that probably the last year of that were very difficult for him. In any case, I recognize and I hope that his crossing of his particular bar was an easy one. For all of the other people on the Binnacle List, on Captain Joe's Binnacle List, all of you remain, as always and forever, in the palm of my hand. And next week, I'll let you know how I fare as I try these travels. And I report these because sometimes people say, oh, Captain Joe, I can't do that. So we're going to give it a try. You and I, we're all going to hold hands. We're going to go together and see how I do. The book this week is a particularly significant one for me, and I am going to communicate to you its significance to you as well. It was a gift from my son and my daughter-in-law, and it is called The Ship Beneath the Ice, and it is, of course, the story of the finding of Sir Ernest Shackleton's Endurance in the Weddell Sea. I report this. I'm about halfway through the book now. It reads very, very quickly. I report this because the author, whose name is Menson, M-E-N-S-U-N, that's his first name, Menson Bound is his surname, B-O-U-N-D, Menson Bound, Director of Exploration, Endurance 22 Expedition. And Mr. Bound, or Dr. Bound, I guess he's a PhD, is taking unto himself the revision of some of the regard in which Sir Ernest Shackleton is held by so many people. At the same time that I got the book, I had a signal from my brother icebreaker captain, Captain Carl, whose son Kurt is on the binnacle list and is continuing to improve. Carl, Mary Jane, and Kurt came to my birthday celebration, Kurt in a wheelchair, but having a wonderful time. And I was just it was just wonderful to have them there with us. So I had a signal from him in which he forwarded it to me, a article by a leadership coach by the name of Martin Guttmann, G-U-T-M-A-N-N. So Martin writes about how some of the things that Sir Ernest had to deal with, or with which he had to deal, no dangling participles there, Premier Captain, with which he had to deal were of his own making. And I submit that many of the challenges that come to any effective leader are of his own making. One cannot ever deny the facts of the Shackleton story, and that is that every single one of his men came home alive. How he got there, how it came that Endurance sank, all of those things are the subject even today of considerable discussion. And in fact, any leader who is an accomplished leader and accomplishes the mission that he has set out to do, for Shackleton's mission changed as Endurance sank. His mission then became to get all of his men home safely. And he accomplished that mission. He certainly did not accomplish the mission of going across the Antarctic continent. That was remained for my good and dear friend Sir Vivian Fuchs to do in 1957. And I've talked about that expedition on this broadcast. And probably we'll talk about it again because there are some great leadership examples there. The point that I make here is that I looked up Dr. Guttmann. I looked at his own biography on his own website. And I determined that Dr. Guttmann has never commanded. He's not commanded at sea. So far as I can tell, he never served in the military. He may be a Swiss citizen, and he may then have participated in the mandatory national service, which I believe is still required in Switzerland. Not too sure of that. He may have done those things. But nowhere in his biography, nor in any of the other material about him that I've been able to find, could I find any evidence that he was a platoon leader or a company commander. Like my friend, my Marine friend, who uses the Shackleton story, who is himself a leadership coach, and who uses the Shackleton story as examples of some good leadership techniques. I cannot see that he ever commanded at sea. My XO, he who gave me the lighthouse service blanket, was himself a captain. He was the captain of one of our patrol boats working the rivers in Vietnam. I have a photograph of him doing an inspection of a junk where the possibility of all of them being blown up was very real every second. So I don't see that Martin ever commanded at sea. I don't see that he ever commanded ashore. In fact, the best that I've been able to come up with is that he has done a lot of reading and he's done a lot of research. In the book, The Ship Beneath the Ice, Mensun Bound, the author, and the man who led the expedition that ultimately found endurance on the floor 3,000 meters down of the Weddell Sea, takes to task the writing of Sir Ernest's own account, South, called South. And one of the things that he says in his book is that Sir Ernest did not write that book himself, that he had a ghostwriter. And he tells us who the ghostwriter is. And he goes on to say that the person who actually wrote the book never took any credit for it, and Sir Ernest never gave him any credit. But this is a bald statement that's put out there, and I looked in vain in the index. There is no index in this book, by the way. I looked in vain in the bibliography. It's a very sketchy bibliography, and it is mostly a bibliography about Sir Ernest himself and not one that quotes all of the sources that Bound used as he wrote his book. So he comes right out and he says that Sir Ernest had this ghostwriter. Now, I don't doubt that he had some help writing it, and maybe he did indeed have that ghostwriter, but to put something out like that without giving me any evidence makes me question the basic scholarship of the book itself. It is, in fact, a very interesting and breathtaking story. I'm halfway through it. When I get to the end of it, I'll give you another review. But I am saying to anyone who acquires this, go into it with an open mind and an open heart. I happen to be one of the believers in the success of Sir Ernest Shackleton's mission to bring home all of his people. And I say this from the point of view of somebody who has indeed commanded at sea, in the heaviest kind of weather, commanded at sea in a number of situations where my own skills were tested to the utmost. And so when I read a book or a story or an article like this one from Martin Guttmann, I want to know, okay, fella or gal, have you been up on the bridge with me in a full gale, rigging a tow? If not, then I look at what you have to say with some skepticism. And that is what I have to say about all of that right now. But certainly is not going to be the last, for sure, that I have to say about it. The G captain today came to me with a very troubling article. And it turns out that of all of the places where we could have counterfeit things, there is somebody out there making counterfeit pilot ladders. Now, if you've ever been out on, let's say you've been on a cruise ship where you had to pick up a pilot. In cruise ships, they have a door all the way down by the waterline, and it's, I think, a relatively simple procedure. But not too a few days ago, I was down in Astoria, which is the port, which is right alongside the Columbia River Bar, arguably the best, the most difficult, most challenging, and most dangerous bar in the world. And when a bar pilot is picked up on the seaward side of the Columbia River Bar, it is often done where the pilot has to climb a what's called a Jacob's ladder. A Jacob's ladder goes back to biblical times, and it is a rope ladder. It has wooden spacers, and the pilot climbs up that, and they have to be really nimble and fit. And some of those ships, it's a long climb. They have no door down at the waterline. So somebody is out there making counterfeit pilot ladders, and the company that makes the genuine ones is called the Qingdao Good Brother Marine Life-Saving Appliance Company Limited. So if you are a pilot on the Columbia River Bar, and you are about ready to climb a pilot ladder that looks to you a little bit dicey, take a look at the label plate as you go up. Make sure that it comes from the Qingdao Good Brother Marine Life-Saving Appliance Company and that it has the proper IMO number. Otherwise, that ladder may fall apart and you may fall in the water. And if you are bringing a ship across the bar at right on the edge of what is safe, it may be not possible to pick you up. My Coast Guard cutter Healy is in port. She is back from the Arctic. She was here for Christmas and for New Year's. But I was at sea for a number of Christmases and New Year's. And so here is one of my New Year's stories. And this one goes back to when I was captain in the Coast Guard cutter Unimac, which was a former Navy seaplane sender, 311 feet long, flat bottom, longitudinally rather than transversely framed, because she was intended originally to lie in tropical lagoons and fuel and service Navy seaplanes. The Coast Guard acquired a number of them after World War II, and we ran them and we ran them and we ran them. They were direct reversing. You had to stop the Fairbanks Morse engines and then reverse them. And the engines were started and stopped by compressed air, and you could run out of compressed air. But those are other stories for other times. This story has to do with our being on patrol up off the Grand Banks, south of Cape Sable, on New Year's Day. And my XO was Bob, number one XO. And he approved the chief commissaryman coming to the cabin and making a request. Many of my crew members in that particular ship were from the Virginia. They were from the 5th Coast Guard District, which was Norfolk. And Virginia and North Carolina. And my chief commissaryman was from Richmond. And he was a black man. And I mention that only because, as my grandfather would say, that was a useful identification feature. But it also means that he came from a Virginia family where the observation of the southern traditions of black-eyed peas, collard greens, and chitlins were observed. So Chief Harrell, for that is his name, and number one, if you think I can't remember some of those things, you certainly have forgotten. Chief Harrell came up and he said, "Captain, we'd like to observe," and he said, "I have brought with me enough chitlins to feed the entire crew, but we need to clean them and get them ready." And he said, and this is part, of course, of the traditional, and since I'm a son of the South, I'm a son of the Commonwealth of Virginia myself, so I knew the custom, and I was certainly all in favor of my crew observing it. And he said, we would like to invite you. We invite you to come and join us in the crew's mess so that we will begin the new year on a high point and with good fortune. So I said, "Well, Chief, of course we will observe all of those customs, and I will be delighted to accept the invitation of the crew to join in observing the New Year's custom and good fortune for all of us." Well, the cleaning of pigs' intestines, which is what chitlins are, the cleaning of that is not a particularly toothsome exercise. And the smell of it got sucked up into the ventilation system of the ship and got circulated around through the entire ship. And I then was reminded of what it was that I was going to be eating. At the appointed day and hour, the chief of the boat came up and said, Captain, the crew is standing by waiting for you to come and have chitlins and collard greens and black-eyed peas to begin the new year so that we have all of us have together a good new year together. And I went down to the mess deck and I went through the mess line with an aluminum tray and was issued a very large helping of this particularly unsavory dish. And I sat down at my place that I'd been given in the mess, in the crew's mess. And, of course, all eyes were on the captain. How is he going to? If there was ever an opportunity and the need to exercise firm resolve, it was taking that first taste of the chitlins. It must be an acquired taste because it is one that I never acquired. I got it down. I put the big smile. I made some appropriate remarks. And XO, I know that you are either listening to this now or you'll be listening to it later. If I've gotten any of this story wrong, send me a signal and I will correct it in my next broadcast. But I did get the chitlins down. I did not disgrace myself. I did not disgrace the cabin. I did not disgrace the command, but it was a close-run thing. The last thing that I have for today is that the end of 1 year and the beginning of a new one is an opportunity for each of us to look back and see the things that maybe we didn't do as well as we should, and look at the things that we did really well. What I look back on is the tremendous amount of love, affection, regard, respect that has poured into me over the year. I know that in my extensive career as a captain, that I made a lot of mistakes. In my extensive career as a father, a grandfather, I probably have made some mistakes as well. But they all come with a tremendous feeling of obligation and commitment to each one of Captain Joe's people, whether you are friend of family rank, whether you are family of marriage or blood, or you are one of Captain Joe's people in some other connection. Each one of you is incredibly precious to me. Each one of you occupies a place in my heart which belongs to no one else. I try in this broadcast, and I think with some degree of success, to talk to each of you because I'm talking to each one of you individually. As I sit here in the captain's chair in the Gene Boss studio, flashing before me are the faces of so many of you, all of the things that we have done and been to each other and that we have done together. This year coming up is going to be a really challenging one for your captain, I think. And I am going to meet those challenges with the intensity that you expect and require of me. It is your support and your concern and your conviction that what we do together is good and important that makes me know that all of this is worth the doing. So we've come once again now, a happiest of New Year's to all of us, to all of you. This is your Captain Joe. As always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again, and we'll meet right here a week from today. And I'll give you my trip report, let you know how I did. And also keep in mind, as always, that I am, as always, on station and watching properly.